for the first time, if you're watching online for the first time, then you're joining us for the third of our six-week series on Sabbath. And this is a subject that I felt God has put on my heart as we ease our way out of lockdown. We have a unique opportunity now to rethink and to rebalance the rhythm of our lives. Society's obsession with busyness and the blurring of Sabbath with a day that I do all the bits that I didn't have time to do in the rest of the week has led many to suffering from burnout. And it's been detrimental to our mental, our physical, our emotional and our spiritual well-being. But the good news is that I believe God is calling us to rediscover the life-giving practice of Sabbath. Now, if you've been with us for all 3 weeks, and I know that I can just looking around, some of you have, some of you haven't. We did an intro a couple of weeks ago. And then last week, I looked at the first of 5 core principles that I'll be outlining as key to practicing if we want to master Sabbath and to receive the fullness of its blessings. Last week, can anyone remind me what I talked about? What was the theme? What was the core principle we looked at last week, anyone? Just shout it out. Stop. Yes, thank you. Stopping. We looked at stopping. It wasn't a trick question. I wasn't asking for sort of a 10-minute sort of debrief of every point I made. We looked at stopping. And this week, we turn our attention to rest. Quite simply, without stopping, we cannot rest. So I'm assuming that as we look at resting, you've also thought that to rest, I need to stop first. Stopping allows us to rest. So when you think about what you do on your Sabbath, do activities that restore and replenish you. Now there's a guideline there, a bit of a guidance for some. I know I had a conversation with a couple last week after the service who enjoy their work, who enjoy things that perhaps might otherwise be kind of considered as unpaid work. It might be cooking or gardening or whatever. And so maybe there's some of you as well that struggled a little bit with kind of the freedom that I suggested last week. That we can choose what we do on our Sabbath. Perhaps there is kind of more freedom than you realised. Well, here's some guidance, if you like, to kind of put alongside that. That when we do Sabbath, do activities that restore and replenish you. So if you like gardening, for example, but you find that despite it being an enjoyable activity, it's also quite exhausting, then perhaps it's not restoring or replenishing you. So there's just trying to kind of give you some practical guidelines, if you like, in how you put these things in place in your life. And those are questions that each of you are going to have to ask yourself and to make your own conclusions about, to discuss it with those others within your household as well. Now, the irony is that many of us are actually brought up to believe that you don't really do anything on the Sabbath, perhaps beyond going to church. Because yet the Hebrew word Shabbat, from which we get the word Sabbath, is a verb. And a verb, for those of you that remember English language at school, is a doing word. Sabbath is something we do, but it takes time and it takes effort to master. So when it comes to resting, what does that mean in practice? Well, ultimately, to rest is about being content in the moment. It's about not striving for more. And I wonder how many of you often find yourselves content in the moment. Content in enjoying the day without feeling the need to try and get more out of it. without feeling the need, oh, I need to max out this day by doing this, this, and this. Otherwise, it's not a satisfactory day. Do you find it easy to be content in the moment? I know it's something I often struggle with. I feel like, oh, I should be doing this instead. Oh, but that needs to be done. Or maybe I could make a better use of this afternoon by doing this or doing that or going here, getting that sorted. We often find that when it comes to unhappiness, the roots of that frequently find themselves in unhealthy comparisons with others. And actually we find that often we strive for more in order to try and achieve happiness, rather than leaning into Jesus in order to find joy and contentment. Now when we continually do this, it creates restlessness. And funnily enough, restlessness is the very opposite of rest. So here's a few examples. We do DIY projects because I wish my house looked better. Buying clothes because I wish I looked nicer. Searching on dating websites because I wish I had a partner to make me happy. Now, none of these things are wrong in and of themselves. Unless you're married, of course, in which case dating websites are definitely out 24/7. But Sabbath rest is about finding contentment in the moment. It's about enjoying the day for the gift that it is, rather than trying to manipulate it into something else. And so those things are kind of outlined. When we sort of strip them back and look at them, what are we doing them for? Often are we striving for something? And actually in doing those on a Sabbath day, actually, is it preventing us fully from resting? From finding contentment in the day, simply for what it is, as the gift of Sabbath? Peter Scazzaro, who's written and researched patterns of Sabbath quite extensively, I think he spent a whole sabbatical doing it at one point, he says that to rest is to be aware of our lives and to find joy in where we are right now. To be aware of our lives and find joy in where we are right now. Now we might find that through drinks or a leisurely meal with friends or family. You might find it through a walk on the beach. Maybe a bike ride along the Broads. You might find it in sitting in the garden and reading a book or the paper. You might find it in sitting in your favourite comfy chair and doing the crossword. The options are almost limitless, and you will know, because we're all so different, you'll know what that might look like for you. And that might even take a little bit of practice and trial and error of what do I actually find that in. But ensuring that we practice rest on the Sabbath will transform the rest of your week. It'll ensure that that spirit of restfulness, being full of rest, literally, goes with us from, let's say, Sunday into Monday and Tuesday. And if your week is a stressful week, it's a busy week, because you've got a stressful job, or you've got a lot on, or because you simply got children and they're a 24/7 drain of restfulness. Actually, the thought as you get through to Wednesday and Thursday that Sabbath is coming, you know you're going to get that rest on the Sabbath because it's a day that is different from the other six. Knowing that that is approaching will help you get through those difficult few days at the end of the week. Walter Brueggemann, the theologian, says that people who keep the Sabbath live all 7 days differently. That sounds good to me. I like that. If I have a day of rest, actually, that transforms my other days. That sounds appealing. It sounds almost like a cheat code for life. And yet this is God telling me that this is okay. And not simply okay, it's a commandment, as we looked about last week. It's part of the Ten Commandments. So what I want to spend time on now is uncovering the secret of rest. Because it's quite easy to say we need to rest. How do we do it? What's the secret? How do we make this a reality? Well, it takes us back to this passage and the words from Jesus in Matthew 11. Because to rest on the Sabbath is to rest the Jesus way. And actually, nothing else will suffice in the long term. To explain rest the Jesus way, I've just got 2 points to share with you. The first is you could title it, if you're making notes, you can write equipment, not escape. Equipment, not escape. And the second point is a lifestyle for life. So firstly, what do I mean by equipment, not escape? Well, if you've got your Bibles open or your app or in front of you or at home, have a look again at what Jesus talks about here. Come to me, he says, all of you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Rest, he says. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. What does he mean about yokes? Take my yoke upon you. We kind of know it. It's kind of one of the sort of, it kind of falls into that potential category, I think, of being kind of a Christian language, which we think we talk about and reel off, but actually when you stop and break it down, what's he going on about? Do we actually understand what that's about? Take my yoke upon you. Well, he's not talking about the eggs that he has for breakfast. He's talking about a kind of yoke that is a piece of farming equipment. It's the kind of yoke that a pair of oxen would wear to join them together. We've got a picture that Pete's going to put up on the screen. Oxen would wear it as part of ploughing the fields to shoulder the weight of the plough. There we go. And enable them to plough the fields in a straight line rather than sort of one of them wandering that way and one of them wandering the other way. So there you go. We'll leave that up for a little bit for you. You can look at the rather thin looking oxen ploughing that field. Now, I suspect that many of you know this. If you've heard this passage preached before, if you've been coming to church for a long time, it's probably been preached on at some point in your life, if you've been a regular in church through the years. But there's a reason that Jesus uses this particular term. Because a yoke was also a common word that would use to describe a rabbi's way of reading the Torah and for his set of teaching on how to live life as a good, God-fearing Jew. Every rabbi had a yoke. And it picked up, it was based on this whole picture here that we see. The difference in Jesus' yoke wasn't simply that he had one. That wasn't unusual, that wasn't controversial. What's radical about Jesus' statement is that his yoke is easy. His burden is light. Now, if you were a disciple of a rabbi, you'd probably find his yoke, whatever it was, to be tough, to be quite difficult to master. It was a lifelong process. Like the oxen carrying the heavy plough, it would be a heavy burden to shoulder. But you would do it, you would become a disciple of whatever given rabbi it was because you felt this was worthwhile. His teachings about how to live your life had enough value in them to make this heavy burden worth taking up. But Jesus is saying, I'm going to do the heavy lifting for you, but I will do it at my pace, not yours. And the heaviest lifting is done upon the cross. The yoke that Jesus gives us is a piece of equipment to help us achieve rest. Now, if you stop and look at a yoke, it doesn't look like a particularly restful piece of equipment for the poor oxen that have been shouldered with it. And if you ask me, Jesus, I'm going to choose a piece of equipment to help give me rest, I'd probably pick a hot tub, maybe a memory foam mattress. But even the comfiest mattress in the world won't help us carry the heavy burdens and responsibilities that life throws at us. The tough things that weigh us down, that cause us to worry, that burden us. All a comfy bed can do is to help us escape those burdens rather than carry them. You can have a nice sleep or a nap for that few minutes or hours, those burdens, you're escaped from them. They don't actually help you how to carry them and get through them. And so Jesus gives us equipment, not escape, because he wants us to live a life where our burdens don't crush us and immobilize us, where they don't prevent us from moving forward in our journey with God. And that kind of life is a life that knows rest. The theologian Frederick Bruner says that obedience to Jesus develops in us a way of carrying life that brings more rest than any other way of living. What he's saying is, if you follow Jesus and take up his yoke, you will find more rest than any other kind of way or method of trying to live your life. It's the best way, if you like, in a nutshell, of dealing with the tough stuff that life throws at you. And the secret to this kind of life is all about lifestyle. It's about Jesus's lifestyle. We need a Jesus lifestyle for life. John Mark Comer, some of you might have heard of his book, I've forgotten, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. I've forgotten the title. The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And he says, if you want to experience the life of Jesus, you need to adopt the lifestyle of Jesus. Now, all of you in this room know that. If you're watching online, you probably know that. But putting it into practice is another matter entirely. And this is what the passage is getting at. I've called it a lifestyle for life because it's a way of living that brings life and joy and eases the burdens that inevitably fall our way. And the lifestyle of Jesus is characterized by rhythms of rest. Rhythms of rest. Whenever you read the Gospels, and I encourage you to do it, obviously, to read the Gospels. When you read the stories of Jesus, take note of how often he incorporates rest into his routines. You know, I think we can be under the impression that Jesus was pretty busy. We have the Gospels kind of 3 years, basically, of Jesus' ministry. Okay, a couple of them include his birth stuff as well. But the vast majority of the four Gospels takes place over 3 years. 3 years of ministry. And actually, it can seem flipping heck. He crammed a lot in. There's a lot of healings. There's a lot of miracles. There's a lot of teaching going on. There's a lot of movement as he travels around sharing the gospel. But look closely and you'll see the rhythms of rest that Jesus incorporates into his life. He retreats regularly to a quiet place to pray, to take space from the intensity of ministering to the crowds of hundreds, thousands. The breaks from his busy life to then spend time with just a small number of close friends and family. Jesus sleeps. Famously takes a nap on a boat in the middle of a storm. There is a man who understands what it means to be at rest. A Jesus lifestyle is one where rhythms of rest are naturally incorporated into what we do. But the problem is that many of us want to live a life like Jesus, but we don't want the lifestyle. It's like dieting. I won't ask how many of you have tried to go on a diet in your life, but I suspect there are a few of us. We all know how to lose weight. It's not difficult. It boils down to using up more calories than you consume. If you do that consistently, you'll lose weight. That means healthier diet, and it means exercise. Now, of course, there are a million one different ways of how to achieve that. But we know that's what it boils down to. It's not a complicated algorithm. Use up more energy than you take in, and you'll lose weight. So why do millions of people struggle with their weight? Well, the real reason is because they want the life of someone who isn't carrying a few extra pounds, but they don't want the lifestyle that's required to get there. We don't want to be hitting the gym or going for a run 3 or 4 times a week. We don't really want to ditch the fizzy drinks or the processed foods or the sugar-laden treats. We want the body, but we don't want the pain and discipline that's needed in order to get it. Here ends my TED talk on dieting. But the same thing is true in our walk with Jesus. We want to be a Christian, but we don't really want the lifestyle of Jesus. We just want to do our own thing and muddle through. Honestly, I think in the 21st century, generally speaking, Christians have become too consumed by what we believe rather than worrying about the kind of lives that we lead. We're eager to talk about salvation, about the life that Jesus has provided through his death and resurrection, but we miss out on the very purpose of it, which is to live. The joy and fulfillment of life, of living with Christ. Only by adopting the Jesus lifestyle will we begin to experience a deeper freedom and satisfaction from life. Only by adopting the Jesus lifestyle will we learn how to shoulder the burdens of life that we all encounter at some point, in a way that is easier and lighter than any other way of living life. And the biggest sign that you're living that out is a rested soul. That's what Jesus is saying here. I will give rest for your souls. That's the clue that you're starting to get this right. A rested soul. So my question for you as we finish today is whether this is a lifestyle that you really want. In order to find rest, we need to reassess. Reassess your rhythms of life in light of Jesus's. Do your daily routines look Christ-like? Just stop, pause, have a reflect. Look back at the last couple of days or the last week. What have your routines been like? Reassess the place of Sabbath in your life. Is it a day which restores and replenishes you, which equips you for the next 6 days to come? Rhythms of rest are ingrained into Jesus' lifestyle, so they need to become ingrained into ours. Time out with God, food with friends, a healthy balance of social interaction, space for reflection and prayer, good sleep. So come to Jesus, all of you who know what it is to be weary and burdened, and he will give you rest. Embrace his lifestyle and learn from it. That's how you'll find rest for your souls. Jesus has already done the heavy lifting. So compared to any other way of life that we would try to lead, his way is easy and his burden is light. Amen.